I'd like to welcome everyone to Spotlight. Spotlight is a program here on ForThePeople.com where we interview members of our FTP family, and we're glad you decided to join us today. A couple of things before we get started. I'd like to thank Start Button for recording our programs for us for the purpose of archiving. And we'll ask that you hold your questions and comments for our guest until the end of the interview. And as usual, remind everyone that text chatting is not permitted in this room. So with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Terry Borden, who is doing our interview today. And Terry will interview our guest today. Terry?
Oh, okay. Thanks, Becky. And we'd also like to thank you for coordinating Spotlight. You do a great job. Okay, our guest today is Teresa Lewis, also known as Tien or Ice Princess. Good afternoon, Tien.
Good afternoon, Terry, and thanks everyone for coming.
Okay, Tien, I'd like to start off maybe going back to the beginning where it all started and your childhood, where you were born, and where maybe where you went to school.
Well, I was born 1970 in a small town in southeastern Indiana called Greensburg, Indiana. I have four immediate brothers and sisters, and we had a pretty rough childhood growing up. You know, it wasn't bad, but my father was an alcoholic and my mother was everything. So, you know, it wasn't always pleasant to be at home, you know, but we made do, and at 5 years old, I went to the blind school, and met a lot of really, really neat people there. You know, as a kid, you kind of are distracted from being at home, and you know, I was homesick, and didn't want to be away from mommy. You know, I was one of my mother's worst kids with nightmares and stuff, and I was pretty clingy as a kid. But it was good for me to be able to go to school and get away. And we went to Indianapolis, you know, to the blind school. And for the first year, I didn't have to stay any weekends. But you know, as I got older, you know, I started to stay more and enjoyed it because I could be with the friends that I made. But I did go to the blind school.
Yeah, okay. How far away from the school was your home?
About 60 miles. About an hour, hour and a half drive, depending on who was driving. My mother has a lead foot, so it took her an hour.
Okay. Well, yeah, I can understand a lot of people when they first go away to school, especially if it's quite a ways from home, get a little homesick. What's some of the activities and things that you do when you were at state school in the younger years?
Well, as I say, you know, I didn't really stay a lot the first year, but like money was an issue, you know, with my family, and my mom, they didn't have bus services, you know, that would take you back and forth on the weekends when I was real young. So I ended up starting to stay every other weekend. And we had, oh, we were spoiled brats, guys. We had a swimming pool. We had a skating rink, a full universal weight system, a gymnasium with a full basketball court, playgrounds. There's several playgrounds that we could go play on. A full track facility. We had it all. So if we didn't have something to do, if there was something, you know, that we couldn't do, then there was a problem because we had it all at our fingertips.
Yeah, sounds really nice. You mentioned brothers and sisters. Now, was any of your brothers or sisters blind, Tien? And also, you might tell us what was the cause of your blindness, or were you born blind?
Yeah, I was born blind, and I do have a sister that's right next to me in age that is vision impaired and that went to the blind school. And I have a condition called Leber's congenital amaurosis. And it's pretty complicated and pretty rare eye condition, and it would take a lot to be able to explain that. But basically, I have an enzyme. I don't create enough of some certain enzyme that creates the rods and cones in your eyes. But there's just one of two of the five of us that are vision impaired.
Okay, I would take it your sister has the same problem, is that right?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, well, yeah, I guess depending on you know who started school first, you at least had somebody there you knew, which I imagine probably helped a little bit.
Yeah, it helped, but it also was a hindrance because she was just a year behind me, and they always thought we were, you know, they didn't know us real well. They always thought we were twins. And it was always the Fleener sisters. And what I did, you know, they thought that she'd want to do. And we're totally different personalities and have totally different interests. And so sometimes it was, you know, a hindrance. And we fought a lot as young kids. We didn't get along in school because they wanted her to be like, you know, like me. And she wasn't.
Yeah, I can understand that. That happens, I guess, a lot of young folks and brothers and sisters. I think we've all seen that. Okay. Well, you said that you had a lot of swimming pools, you know, ball courts and so on at the school. Did you take part in any of that?
Yeah, I love to skate. We had a skating rink, and that was my favorite thing to do on weekends and recreational activities. I wasn't a swimmer. I had an incident. The summer before I started going to the blind school, I went to the school for summer school just to see how I'd like it. And, you know, I was 4 years old, and I was a little kid. You know, I couldn't even touch bottom, you know, and anything in the 4 foot, you know, so I'd hang onto the ladder. I was really afraid. And they had this gym teacher there that thought that even at 4 years old, you know, no matter how afraid I was of the water, I should be able to blow bubbles. Well, she proceeded to, you know, show me how to blow bubbles, and I wasn't going to put my head down in the water, so she did it for me. And I don't know, it just kind of gave me some type of fear, you know, of water, and that I, you know, I just get in situations in water where if I can't, you know, keep my head up, I don't, you know, I don't go because I'm really frightened of it. I did learn to swim, but not real well, just enough to basically save myself if I had to. Because I was really frightened of it because of that incident.
Yeah, I can understand that. That's pretty definite. Another thing, when you were there on the weekends, did they have any kind of activities, such as dances or anything that I'd imagine that's probably when they had their sports events and stuff, but did you ever have any dances or did they have outside activities off the school campus that you could attend?
Yeah, they did. We had this thing called Canteen, and it's basically where you could go down and they had a little candy store, and you could buy candy, and then across from the canteen there was a big room where, you know, they would play the stereo and you could dance and sit and talk and just like a social area. And a lot of times they would take us to the mall or to a movie on Saturdays, you know, to break away, you know, the time in the weekend. And a lot of my times, especially in my teenage years, I had some pretty good house parents, and I would cook. You know, we would cook and we'd make different things, cookies, and, you know, we would do different activities like that.
Okay. Yeah, I know state schools are, they try to keep you pretty active. Did you graduate from the state school? What year did you graduate, Tian?
Yeah, I did graduate from the Indiana School for the Blind in 1988.
Okay. What did you do after school? Did you go for further training, further schooling, go to college?
I didn't go to college. I probably should have, because I was a bad student in school. I mean, especially through elementary and junior high. And I was one of the, I was a rebel. And I didn't care whether I did my homework or not. And I didn't care who knew it. But toward, you know, my senior year in high school, I was taught, you know, I had a lot of mentors in high school. And basically they saw my, you know, made me change my thinking. And I didn't make the honor roll until I was, till my senior year in high school. And I was really proud of that. And I wish I'd listened to some of these people sooner. But anyway, I did not go to college. I went to Lions World Services for the Blind for secretarial office and receptionist training. It was a six-month course. I was there from July of 98 till December of 98. And it was an interesting change. I did the evaluation and finished the course and I made, you know, fairly good grades. A lot of it was, you know, okay, yeah, that's good. You know, you didn't get a grade, you know, so far. Okay, you pass. And I have a whiny dog here. I'm so sorry. But anyway, they, you know, it was different from the blind school in that, you know, there wasn't a lot of, you know, they had activities where you could go, but you had a lot of freedom. And, you know, it was adults, of course, and I'd never been in a position, you know, where I was solely responsible for what I did and, you know, what I chose, you know, for any of my actions. And, you know, sometimes, you know, I didn't make make the right decisions, but I had a ball, you know, parties and, you know, and different things like that. And I just had a ball down there. Arkansas, you know, is especially on the, you know, the weekends, there's not a lot to do. You have to create things to do. But I made a lot of friends down there, and some of which I still am in contact with today. But, you know, it was interesting in that, you know, I figured I'd get more of a classroom textbook type training, and it wasn't. It was more independent study. And, you know, you do this and do it right and you'll pass type thing. And then the switchboard training was really easy for me because that's really what I wanted to do. And, you know, I ran the switchboard in the main switchboard for the center as part of my grade. And then I did an on-the-job training situation at the Red Cross. And they were really nice, you know, let me work there, you know, and be on the switchboard. And, you know, and they said that if I was staying in Arkansas that they would love to hire me. And they gave me a gift, you know, before I left. And, it's a really nice memorabilia type thing just from, you know, for the Red Cross. And it was really fun.
That's good. I want to go back to school. I've probably skipped over. I know you sing and you like music. Did you were you into choir or anything at school?
Oh yeah, big time. I started taking piano lessons in fourth grade, and I was in piano every year except eighth grade because that was a really, really busy year. In choir, I was in. They didn't start you in the chorus until sixth grade, but I was in it all 6 years at the, you know, that they'd let me be in it. I got to, you know, of course, every year we went to piano contests. There were two piano contests we went to every year, and I was in those, of course, all except eighth grade. And my senior year, I didn't go to contests and piano, because I was wrapped up in more singing things. And you know, choir, I never considered myself a good pianist at all. I not at all comfortable with that, but I could, you know, back then I would sing. If someone played for me, I'd sing anything. But I went my let's see, in 10th grade, and I was in a choir, a small group, a 9-person group called the Deaf Camps. And it was just a, you know, just 9 of us girls, you know, from the choir. And we were all, we went to contest too, you know. So we had, I had piano contest. Then, of course, the vocal contests were held the same day. So I had, usually a solo vocal and then my group, my ensemble. So I was pretty busy those days. But the deaf cant and the vocal contest, I didn't start until 10th grade. Oh, 9th grade for the deaf cant. I was in the deaf cant for all that time. But vocal contest was fun for me. I really enjoyed it. And I didn't get any second places. And all of my judges were really, really cool, you know. And even one proceeded to show us what to do to make it better. And it was just too fun. I thoroughly enjoyed contests. But I always liked to be in the center of attention as a kid. It's like, look at me. Yes, here I am, you know. And that just made it even better for me because I was the only blind girl. And then they're like, oh, can we come in and hear the blind girl sing? And the judge told him no. And I said, oh, no, let them in. And the whole room was full, standing room only. Whoever could sit, sat, but standing room only. And I'm like, oh, no, I wish I hadn't have done that because my instructor's like, Teresa, the room's filling up. And I'm like, oh, you didn't have to tell me that after I made that decision, did you?
Yeah, sounds like you're really in the spotlight that day. Oh, that's pretty good. Okay, so you went on to Arkansas and went through the evaluation, and what did you do after that? Did you find a job right away, or did you go on for further training after Arkansas?
I didn't find a job right away, which is pretty discouraging for me. Is what I did is, when I came home from Arkansas, my youngest sister had, I didn't have a place to stay at my mother's because my younger sister, she said, well, sis is going to Arkansas. We don't, you know, we're going to take her bed down. We're going to take, because we shared a room, you know, all three of us girls. We shared a room. And we, you know, the day I left for Arkansas, she took my bed down, took my dresser and everything out. So I didn't have a place to stay, so I stayed at my dad's, which was the biggest mistake I'd ever made in my life, because my dad is an alcoholic, and I love my stepmother and my, you know, my half-brother and sister. I just love them to death. But my dad would always come in late at night and get loud and carry on, and they had a small apartment, so I slept, you know, I had a bed, but it was in the living room. And, you know, he was always, you know, making, you know, some type of remarks and, wake up, sis, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, you know. I think I'm going to have a ham sandwich. Would you want one? You know, and just silly stuff that, you know, alcoholics and, you know, when they're thoroughly involved in their situations do. But I babysat my little brother while, you know, my stepmother worked. And I stayed there only 2 months because I just couldn't stand it anymore. And then I went to a friend of mine who is a cook at the blind school. And she's a house parent now, but she was a cook at the time. Her daughter lived in Brownsburg, Indiana, which is just west of Indianapolis. And she needed someone to babysit her young boy while she worked. She worked evenings. And she had a kindergarten age for a boy. She said, well, you know, you can stay with Teresa, you know, her name was Teresa too, you know, until, you know, you'll be closer and you can, you know, go to classes and, you know, whatever, you know, you get started on. And so I agreed to do that and babysat for him, and he was a really, really good, good kid. Kind of rebellious because, you know, he knew I couldn't see. And he'd test me, but, you know, he was a really good kid. So I did that. I stayed there for 2 years. During that time, took classes at Crossroads, which is a computer classes at Crossroads, to better my skills. And I took an a career and job search training course, which was a lot of fun. Taught me how to network. Taught me how to build a resume. How to basically how to sell myself, as an employee. And then I, went to Crossroads for computer training. And at Crossroads, I met a lady through the state personnel. Her name was Linda King. And she was put, at this conference one time, and she saw this guy, the facilities director at LaRue Carter Hospital. And, they were putting up, hey, I've got X position, and they were just chatting about whatever positions they had available. And, he mentioned that he had a switchboard position available. And she said, hey, I have a young lady that might be perfect for that position. Would you be interested in interviewing her? And he said, sure, have her call me. And he gave the number and everything, and I did. And that's how I got on at LaRue Carter. And it was really frightening because I wasn't sure, that when I went for the interview, the lady that interviewed me was really honest. She said, we never had, a blind person work with us. And, she asked, a lot of questions, how would you do this and how would you do that? But it was, they were really nice and really easygoing, real laid back, and that's what I like. And they hired me on the spot.
That's good. You mentioned, how you do different things. What does a switchboard operator consist of? What do you do?
Well, I answer all the incoming and outgoing calls for the hospital. I page any doctor, I'll page anybody that they don't know how to page themselves. And a lot of people know, they think that, well, since we've got a switchboard operator, I can be lazy and I don't have to memorize, I don't have to keep those numbers at hand because she'll do it for me. Type of thing. I update the telephone directory. We used to have a fax machine in the office, but I asked them to take that out because it was really difficult for me to keep up with printed faxes. And, people would come in and look for their own faxes and they'd throw the other faxes to the side and, they wouldn't, I couldn't keep them coordinated. It was really difficult for me. I do the schedule for the on-call doctor. I don't do it now because the evening shift lady does it, because she's more stuff that she needs, for the week. But I, keep the phone book up to date. If we need any supplies, those are ordered. I make a list and someone else fills out the form. But basically greet visitors. Call and if have anybody come down for their visitors. It's pretty busy. If you're not answering a phone call, you're taking a visitor. And there's not a lot of time for computer work. I'll tell you what, I was updating the directory a couple weeks ago, and as soon as I get into it, I get a situation, at the hospital. I'd have to call emergency services for a unit and get an ambulance on the way, or it just seems like any time I'd get into it and get into the database and start changing stuff, I'd have to do something else. And so it's kind of it's kind of hard to really get going on something tedious when you've got to do so many other things, answer phones, take visitors, and things like that.
Okay, interesting. Do you do most of your work on the computer, or do you have anything braille at your job?
I have the directory and pager lists and things like that. I have it in my braille light, and it is in the computer, but I have memorized the majority of it. There's not too many numbers that I don't know, and unless they're brand new, and they have a communication problem as far as getting those brand new numbers. You don't generally always see them. So a lot of times I'll be told something, and I won't be able to get it in the database right away. And sometimes 2 weeks later, they'll say, "Hey, so-and-so's not in the directory. Oh, their number's such and such." Well, yeah, you remember that, but I don't, and I have to do better at remembering to put things in that I find out, because they don't communicate real well. But a lot of things I'll get, like the menu and all the reading stuff, they'll send me by email so I can read it, and if they have updates that they need to go in the phone book, they'll send it all by email, and then I'll take care of it. But a lot of people, they don't realize, and a lot of these people too, it's kind of interesting. They don't think of me as a blind person, because they just say you're just so good. You don't need anything, and you don't need any help, and I don't think of you as a blind person. So here they come in with this paper copy of something that they want done, or that something I should know about, like a calendar of events for a certain department. And I'm like, "Can you send me that by email? I can't read that." And I'm like, "Oh, duh." And a lot of people, it makes them feel real bad, but I don't mean it to. And I have to explain to people, it's like, I work here and I work so independently. I can't expect everybody to know that.
Okay. Another question. Now, do you have any, other than work, do you have any hobbies or anything like that you enjoy doing to take up your spare time when you're not at work?
I love my computer, and I love to needlepoint. I plastic canvas, needlepoint, and yarn. And I learned how to do that in school, too. I failed to mention. But I like to make, I like to come up with different things, too. I make, coasters, for your glass. I've made lamps. You put a flashlight down in. I've made bookmarks. And my signature piece is my keychains. I love to make people braille keychains. I'll do the name in print on one side. It's two pieces of canvas, if you know what plastic canvas is. And I'll do it in braille, and I'll overlap the stitches like 7-8 times, the opposite way, so the dots really stick up and they puff up. And then I'll fill it in with the background color, and then I'll put a little loop on it, and then I'll sew them together. And then there's your little braille keychain. I usually do them in black and white because of the braille dots, they look like dominoes, and they're just so cool.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I believe I've got one of those. They're really, really neat, and I do a good job with them. So keep up the good work. Alrighty. See, one other question I think I left out is, do you have any children, or are you married, or have you ever been, or whatever? And fill us in on that a little bit, maybe.
I am married. I do not have any children. However, just as a small side note, I am going through a divorce right now, and it's not something that I care to elaborate on, but, it's just a situation, things you go through in life, and, this is one of my low points, and I'll get through it, and I'm a very positive person, and I'm having no disagreement from my husband, but I think everything will work out, and everything's going to be okay. And, we are still friends even through it, and that's all I can ask. I couldn't ask for a better situation, if it has to be a bad one and have to go through it to be in right now.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I always want to make the best of it. And, okay, well, is there anything that you'd like to tell us that we maybe haven't brought up yet? And I do have another question. A question I like to ask all people. How did you learn about FTP?
Well, there's one thing I didn't mention in my hobbies. I love dolls, porcelain dolls and fancy frilly outfits. And, you know, when I was in school, I always wanted to be a princess, you know, when I was a young kid. And when I became an adult and, you know, was in charge of my own finances, I began to become interested in dolls. And a lot of my dolls are very expensive, so I don't have a lot of, you know, the dolls that I'd like. But, you know, because they're so expensive. But I have a few really, really, really nice dolls. And I like to collect bells, crystal figurines, and refrigerator magnets from all over the, you know, world. I have friends in different countries and stuff that send me, you know, magnets and silly stuff just for my little refrigerator and collection. But I love my dollies. And a lot of times, you know, even in my email address and stuff, I have to put, you know, I put a little doll thing, you know, because I just love my dollies. Oh, and how did I find out about FTP? My sister, and she's a internet freak, okay? She's all over, everywhere. She's all the time telling me about something. And she said, hey, sis, I found this site. This site is so cool. She said, yeah, it's got different rooms on it, you know, where you could go in, like the coffee shop and, you know, they've got all kinds of rooms. Go into, you know, check it out. And I'm like, oh, man, I couldn't talk to anybody on, you know, chat. I couldn't do that. She said, yeah, you can. It's really fun. So about 2 weeks later, you know, I type in the 4-the-people.com. It's probably, 9 o'clock at night or something. It's on Tuesday. I don't know how I remember that it's a Tuesday, but I did. And I thought, well, okay, the room that's mentioned is the, you know, that Abby mentioned was the coffee shop. And there was 9 people in the coffee shop. And so I went in. And, of course, my audio wasn't right and everything. And so I came in, and Jennifer says, oh, hi, Tian. Or, you know, and someone said something about being new to the site. And I said I was new to the site and my audio wasn't right. So they helped me get my audio right. And it was just so interesting to be able to talk to people, you know, from sitting in my living room, you know, with nothing but a little stick mic, and everybody, you know, from wherever they were in the country, it just felt like they were all right in my living room. It was really, really awesome.
Yeah, do you feel that for the people has made quite a difference in your life, everyday life? I know it has mine.
Yes, it has. I've met a lot of really, really, really nice people on FTP, and a lot of people, you know, you think that just because you don't know them personally, you know, that you know, just have a aesthetic, you know, relationship, you know, they're just there, you know, as friends on, but they're not. I mean, you know, I have a lot of really, really close friends that I really care about on, for the people, and I think, you know, without becoming arrogant or, you know, anything like, I think I have a lot of friends that care about me, too, and I just think it's a wonderful, wonderful community, and I'm very proud to be a part of it.
Oh, that's good. Well, I want to thank you for coming on here today with us, and if you have anything else, go ahead, and if not, we will open the floor up for any questions.
No, I think I've said enough.
Okay, does anybody have any questions for Tian?
Deanna, I'm curious about this switchboard. How many lines did you have coming in on that switchboard, and how did you know which one was, you know, ringing, and how did you know which one to answer?
Well, Becky, it's a trial and error thing. You have 10 lines that come in, and my pumpkin is not happy, pumpkin. I'm sure you can hear us squeaking. I'm so sorry, guys. There's 10 lines ringing in. Incoming calls come in sequence, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Outgoing calls come in backwards, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, etc. So if I take a call, you know, say there's nothing on the switchboard, and it starts to beep. If I hit 10 and I get a dial tone, I know it's 1, and I go to 1, and, you know, I get my call. Now, it does get a bit confusing once you get 4 and 5 calls backing up, but I've gotten kind of used to it. You know, I know that if I've taken a call on 1, you know, and that call is processing, the next incoming call, should it be an incoming call, is going to be on line 2. In the same way for outgoing calls from 10, 9, 8, 7. And I've lit up the whole thing, daggone it. I work days there, and it gets pretty busy, and I've had every single one of them lit up at some time or another, and it gets overwhelming because everybody wants what they want now. You know, nobody wants anything. Nobody can wait. You know, everybody wants everything now, and it doesn't always work that way.
Well, do you have to know which room the patients are in, and do you connect phone calls to the patients? That must be quite a challenge.
Actually, I work at a psychiatric facility called LaRue Carter Hospital in Indianapolis, and psychiatric patients, at least in this hospital, do not have their own phone in their room per se. They have unit phones. And they have 4 or 5 phones on each unit. And the patients, a lot of things in our hospital, you know, are confidential. So their calls will be screened for them. And, you know, a lot of patients, you know, have parties that they're not allowed to talk to because of, you know, various things in their illness. And so the attendants and the nurses on the units will screen their calls, and generally they'll take them. But we have to be very careful when transferring calls to patients, especially, you know, if they have no information on their little card that we get, you know, on their visitation or, you know, telephone, because they'll sign a sheet at admission saying whether they want visitors or phone calls. And if they say no, then, you know, we don't know that patient exists, even though we see their name on the list and we know that they're on unit A2. We can't put that call through. And a lot of times that list isn't current, so we have to check. So, you know, sometimes processing those calls takes a little longer because we have to ensure confidentiality and privacy for those patients that request no information.
Great interview, TN, and thanks for being interviewed today. You've told me several stories about your work at the hospital. I'm wondering if you could tell us the scariest situation you've ever been in there.
There's been a few, actually. First of all, my switchboard is closed up in an office, but the whole front of the office is a window, a sliding glass door window type thing. And I remember one day sitting, you know, this is, you know, before we've been in 2 locations since I've been at LaRue Carter, but this is, you know, over in the first location. And a patient came down, you know, he was enjoying his pass, and his wife and a baby were visiting. And apparently his wife and baby, for some reason, were not supposed to visit. The wife, you know, tend to cause trouble with a lot of other staff members and people, and they asked that she not visit for a few days, you know, just to kind of calm the situation down, and she tended to agitate the patient. You know, her husband, you know, she would say mean things, and, you know, she just wasn't a very pleasant person. Well, the attendant came down to get the patient, and you know, the baby was, the mother and the baby were getting ready to leave, and she'd set the baby in the car and pulled the car up front so she could say goodbye to her husband. And all of a sudden, you know, this patient starts yelling and carrying on. I will not go back to the unit. I'm visiting with my wife, and I'll go back when I'm good and ready. You know, of course, there was choicey words, carrying on. Well, a fight ensued. And I'm telling you what, it was right, you know, in the hallway beside my office. And, you know, and the lady that, you know, the mother, and she said, "I saw you hit him. I saw you. You hit him." And then all of a sudden I hear this bam, bam, bam. And, like, pictures were being knocked off the walls. And there was a lot of screaming and yelling. And I'm like, oh, gosh. And all I did was got on the phone to every unit. I had over there, we didn't have a public address system. And I called every unit. I said, "Hey, we need help down here. We need staff assistance." That's what we call it, staff assistance. That we got a fight between an employee and a patient. And, apparently, you know, even, you know, in that situation, I mean, they were fighting big time, you know, and I don't like fights. And yelling and screaming and carrying on, and especially around me when I don't know what's going on. And it was very, very, very frightening.
Yeah, that sounds like more than enough excitement for one day, Deanne.
Yeah, and you know, the funny thing about it was the housekeeper was in the hallway, and they knocked the pictures off the wall, and he just goes and gets his broom and starts sweeping because, you know, it's glass. You know, and they have to get it up, you know, so that no one, because our patients sometimes will pick up a piece of that glass and hurt themselves with it. So we have to be very careful. And he just nonchalantly goes and gets his broom and starts sweeping like it's no big deal.
You mean during the course of the fight?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Tian, you said that you had to phone emergency services on occasions for the patients. Is it difficult to keep calm under those circumstances?
I had to get used to it, and I called, the first time I ever called 911 for someone, it was actually a very, very serious situation in Arkansas. And the first time, the teacher, she told me, "Well, I could do that for you." I said, "No, I think I better do it because I'm going to have to do this should I get a job in this profession." And so I called the emergency services, and we didn't have too much information. Basically, that we had a patient, you know, we had a student that was unconscious, possibly with a diabetic situation. And so I called the ambulance, and I was shaken. You know, I was really shaken. And, you know, the sad thing about that situation was, is what we didn't know is that that patient was already had passed away from the diabetic situation in the night. And when they went in to see what was going on with him, you know, it was just quite an awful situation because he was over the bed with, you know, a peanut butter jar in one hand and a crack, you know, there was crackers all over the floor, and, you know, he was trying to get something to eat. And, you know, he died, you know, leaning over the bed and stuff. It was really, really, really frightening. But I'm used to it now. I do it, and I just say, "Okay, you want an ambulance to F unit. What's the situation with the patient?" And they say chest pains or multiple seizures or whatever, you know, whatever it is, or self-inflicted wound or, you know, things like that. And I just call it up and say, "Hi, this is Teresa Lewis at LaRue Carter Hospital. I need an ambulance, please." And they ask you to verify your address, and they ask for your callback number, and within 3 minutes, we have an ambulance.
Deanne, what are some of your other interests? I know you love your dogs. I know you're a great baker. What are some of your other interests?
I love country and western music. I'm a huge, huge Alabama fan. I just love them to death. You know, and their music here recently hasn't been, you know, tops. And I, as an Alabama was young and new, I loved everything they came out with, and went to concerts and things like that. And I love music, and I do love to bake. I would rather bake than cook, though. You know, I can cook a meal, and I can do a good job, but as far as, you know, cooking in general, I love to bake cookies, cakes, and pies, and all the stuff that just makes you fat. What can I say? Let's see. What else do I like? Oh, goodness. See, you make me have to think about these things. You know, a lot of things I just do. You know, my needlepoint is a big thing. I think a lot. You know, I can needlepoint and, you know, and I feel good when I needlepoint something I think someone will really enjoy, especially if it's something that has never been seen or, you know, before, or something that challenges me. I have to be challenged in a project. Like, for example, I made a tissue box about a month or two ago, and I'd never made one. And everybody had a pattern for the same size box, but I didn't want to do it that way, so I cut the plain pattern out and did my own design on it, and it just turned out beautiful, and I was so excited about it. And, you know, just stuff like that. If I do something new, you know, in that craft, you know, that's me. You know, I like to create things, and I can cut things out and just piece things together. And I made a picture frame once as a baby gift, and, you know, it just turned out really nice, and put little bows on it and beads. And, you know, just little things like that. Anything to work my mind, you know, as far as creating something or, you know, things like that, especially with my needlework.
Yeah, Tiana has very generously donated some keychains that will be in the FTP Mall in the next few days, and she does really nice work. I also think you have a pretty nice doll collection, don't you, Tiana?
Doll collection? At first I thought you said dog collection. I only have two of those.
Yeah, she did say doll collection. And is it true you really like to play poker?
I'm addicted. What can I say?
And I said dog collection. D-O-L-L.
Yeah, I have some really, really nice Franklin Mint dolls. I got some fun Franklin Mint dolls, too. But my favorites are, I have the Gone with the Wind dolls. Rhett and Scarlett on the Staircase. Oh, they're beautiful, and they're all jessied up in their little, she's got on this red velvet gown and it's buttoned down the front, and he's holding her, you know, in his arms at the bottom of the staircase, you know, when I think that, you know, the Franklin Scarlett, I don't give a damn, you know, when he drops her down off the staircase. Well, these dolls, he's holding her, and her head is like over his shoulder, and, you know, they're kind of small dolls, but they're, you know, kind of Barbie figure, but they had to make them like that so that, you know, the figure, you know, he could hold her, and there's like holes in the bottom of his feet where you basically put him on the staircase like you would put pegs on a pegboard, you know. His feet have holes in them so it'll hold him, and it's a red velvet staircase, and it's so cool. And you know, I have a Princess Diana doll, and I have the Frank Sinatra doll, and I'm looking for me an Elvis doll, but I haven't found him yet. I have to find the one I want. I've seen a couple, but they're not what I want. And the Frank Sinatra doll, he plays, you can push it's got like a coin little button on the front of the stand, and you can push it, and he sings part of Witchcraft. It's just too cool. And then I have three Harley Davidson dolls, and those are really cool, but, you know, I don't want to bore you guys with my little dollies. Oh, the Kennedys, I got them too, and Princess Di.
Boy, that is so neat.
Yeah, how many dolls do you have in your collection, Tim?
I've probably got like 7 or 8 of the expensive dolls, but I like the little cheapies too, because they have personality and character of their own. And I love the, what is that? House of Lloyd, and those, they have a lot of beautiful Christmas dolls, and I have several of those. I mean, I love the Victorian outfits, and a lot of these dolls have fur coats and fur-trimmed hats and parasols and feathers and, you know, high-heeled shoes and sequin and rhinestone and beads. I just love those kind of dolls. I always, you know, when I was a girl, that's what I wanted to be, you know, just a, oh, I'm so, so Chris, don't touch me, you know, type, you know, as far as when I play house and stuff, you know, and play, I, you know, have the doll, you know, the glitter and the beads and, you know, and things like that. And that's what I love in my dolls.
Yeah, that's great. Sounds like you got quite a collection there. Okay, is there any other questions for Tian?
Probably about 150 dolls, close to 200, but not quite, including everything.
Well, I just want to thank you both. You both did a fine job, and Tian, it's good to hear your story. It's a lot of stuff I hadn't heard before, and I'm really grateful for your friendship and to have met your acquaintance and the whole schmear. I'm just glad you're a part of the people here. Thank you, and good luck to you in the future.
And we'd like to thank everyone for coming to Spotlight today and hope that you'll come again next week when our good friend Wild Child will be in the Spotlight.